All this week, we're celebrating sustainability in the Northland leading up to the 22nd annual Lake Superior Harvest Festival, September 12th. John LaForge is the co-director of NukeWatch, and he is our guest this morning. NukeWatch is a nonprofit organization working for a nuclear-free, sustainable energy future. John, good morning. Thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Oh, good morning, Lisa.
NukeWatch has been around for a long time, and you've been fighting the good fight for a long time against nuclear energy. Do you think people are still as concerned about it now as they were maybe 10, 20 years ago?
Oh, that's a good question. I believe it depends on where you are. In Western Europe, there's a lot of concern because of the fallout from Fukushima that still impacts people, especially in Germany, where, you know, wild boar hunting is still forbidden, an ancient tradition there, because those animals are still contaminated. And in Japan, of course, there's broad concern about the restart of reactors that have all been shut down since the 2011 triple meltdown at Fukushima on the northeast coast. Here in the U.S., I think there's a growing concern about the question of whether nuclear power can do anything to prevent or stave off climate change, because the industry is promoting new nuclear reactors as a bridge to a carbon-free, nuclear-free future. And so there's quite a good debate about that question here in the States. The president, with his Safe Energy Plan just announced a couple weeks ago, actually zeroed out nuclear power as a way to get us through the climate crisis, saying it's too expensive, you can't build reactors fast enough to make a difference with climate change, and then there's the problem of pollution and radioactive waste production.
So as NukeWatch has a presence at the Harvest Festival, what kind of information are you going to be talking about with folks? Obviously, people may have questions, and you'll be answering those questions, but what else are you going to be talking with folks about?
Well, we like to highlight our own offices here in the far northwest corner of Wisconsin, where we run an entire farm compound here with 10 residents and 7 buildings and 4 houses, with a 10,000-watt photovoltaic array that's out in the hayfield. And we get a check back from the local power company every month because it produces more electricity than we use here with this big of a compound of people and activities. So that's one of the things we're going to highlight is alternatives to fossil fuel energy production. We also work real hard for the abolition of nuclear weapons and weapons of mass destruction in general. So we're going to have information about all these subjects there at our info table, as well as news and information about nonviolent campaigns against these more polluting industries.
Which has a lot to do with not only sustainable energy, but a lot to do with sustainable communities.
Yeah, that's right. We like to think that a sustainable community is one devoted to nonviolent action, and that's another thing that we're sort of well known for over the years, taking principled or rather dramatic stands against the war system, nuclear power and weapons, and environmental injustice as it crops up all over the country. A lot of polluting industries have been deliberately placed in minority communities, and we try to address these concerns too.
You know, John, it's interesting that you mentioned that, because this morning on our Earthwise feature, that's exactly what they talked about, and how in many instances, in particular along the East and West Coast, it's folks that are wealthy, that have beachfront homes, that are opposing putting up wind turbines, even though they could be located far enough offshore that they wouldn't be obvious. But it seems like, as you mentioned, sometimes these coal plants, whatever, are put in areas where people are low income, and then when you get this wonderful clean energy that's available, the folks that are wealthy have the clout to say, no, we don't want it any place, you know, where it would spoil our view.
Yeah, it's interesting that money has such a gigantic role to play in politics, even in environmental politics, where you think people would know better. With regard to nuclear power, we know that the uranium mining that took place in the United States mostly took place on large Indian reservations out west. And even though there's not much of that sort of mining going on in the States anymore, these communities are left with millions of tons of uranium mining waste in mountainous piles all over the Southwest, where the winds still take and blow this material into their communities or contaminate the rivers out there. It's a problem that's very rarely talked about, and of course, in this case, it impacts mostly Native American communities.
John, I'd like to ask you, since you've been a student of this for so long, what I'm sure is a very naive and simple-minded question, but I'm going to ask it anyway. When a company comes into an area and they want to do a project, and you know that will have an environmental impact, fill in the blank, they always talk about remediation, and they're going to make it all nice, just like it was before, and they're going to clean everything up, blah, blah, blah. Someone told me recently that the problem, of course, is that the cleanup and that sort of thing is left to happen at the end, and by then there's no money, they've moved on, nobody cares. Hasn't anybody ever said, absolutely, but we want the remediation money up front before you start?
That's a brilliant idea, and in fact, some communities have started to do that. Most recently, I'm glad you asked that. You know, there's a controversial mining proposal for northern Wisconsin, way up near Lake Superior in the Pinoki Hills. Now, the company pushing that project just recently pulled out in February, I believe, and that's after Ashland County and several others. Well, Ashland County actually did pass a resolution that involved insurance for damage to buildings, structures, roads, sewer systems because of the blasting having a vibratory effect on all these permanent structures. And so that's another way to address these questions, is to get this insurance up front, that if you do damage to the area, then you're going to indemnify us so we don't have to cover the cost. Cover for remediation or cost of remediation up front would be another thing to demand, as you point out, because the companies do claim over and over, especially now there's this one up in northern Minnesota, PolyMet, considering a copper mine there. Maybe they should be required, as you suggest, to have a complete remediation plan paid for before they go ahead.
Well, and of course, once you start to involve insurance in the whole deal, that's pretty much guaranteed to bring whatever it is to a grinding halt also.
Well, it's quite likely, because it increases the cost of the ore so much, and mostly, I believe, in the case of this northern Wisconsin proposal, which was for iron ore, the price of the ore might have fallen enough that the prospectors lost interest. But it's also the problem with up there, there is a problem of so much surface water that would be made vulnerable by the mining drainage that the costs, I believe, looked overwhelming compared to the price of the ore. In Minnesota, I believe it's the same problem. Opponents of that mine are looking at surface water, the boundary waters of the Coushwee River, being threatened by acid mine drainage running directly into the boundary waters and then ultimately Lake Superior. This is not sustainable. Lake Superior itself is far more an economic resource for fish and tourism than we can imagine, and that's a permanent sort of a resource, whereas the mining is a short-term boom and bust operation that historically is never sustainable.
Well, John, folks will have the opportunity to have some really interesting conversations with you at the Harvest Festival. And thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Oh, you're very welcome, Lisa. Nice talking with you.
John LaForge is the co-director of Nuke Watch and our guest this morning on Northland Morning. All this week, we're celebrating sustainability in the Northland, leading up to the 22nd annual Lake Superior Harvest Festival, September 12th.